Hello, everyone. To those of you who are just getting connected now, we're just going to start. Wait about 30 seconds for everybody who is being connected to be connected, and then we'll kick off today's webinar. So just sit tight for a few seconds, then we're going to get started. All right, it looks like the attendees number is kind of starting to level off a little bit, so we'll get started. Hello, everyone. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, as you see from the sign behind me. I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on the courthouses are back open. Now what? The optics and legalities of restarting legal collections. As states have begun to loosen their shelter-in-place guidelines and reopen businesses, courthouses across the country have begun to reopen as well. But legal collections right now is definitely not a black and white decision. The decision to file or pursue a legal collection strategy is fraught with uncertainty, as I say. Today, we've got a pair of executives who are here with us to share their insights and perspective on the state of legal collections now and going forward. Before I introduce our panel, let me take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the arm industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, offers a number of exciting podcasts, manages a Slack channel, just launched a video series, and I think there's some other things I'm probably forgetting, but all for the arm industry. The site is free for everyone to use. It is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it's got to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Porter Heath Morgan is the general counsel for Morgan Financial Group and a partner with Malone Frost Martin. He specializes in providing general counsel and compliance services for third-party collection agencies. He's a third-generation collection attorney and has worked in the commercial, medical, and retail accounts receivable industry for more than 20 years. He's licensed in Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Wyoming, and is a member of the Supreme Court Bar. He's a member of ACA International's member attorney program and a founding member of the Colorado Creditor Rights Bar Association, where he serves as a member of its board of directors. Also with us on the phone, but not in video today, so that's why you don't see him, is Joel Rosenthal, who serves as Vice President of Business Development and Client Relations for Provest, the nation's largest service of process company. Joel was the Director of Business Development for JJL Process Corp prior to Provest's acquisition in 2017. Before joining JJL in 2011, Joel was Director of Sales and Marketing for Unifund. The format for today's webinar is a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please either enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel or type it into the chat module. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, to make sure nobody gets any trouble, let me read the following disclaimer. This presentation is not intended to be legal advice and may not be used as legal advice. Legal advice must be tailored to the specific circumstances of each case. Every effort has been made to ensure this information is up to date. It is not intended to be a full and exhaustive explanation of the law in any area. It should never be used to replace the advice of your own legal counsel. With that, let's launch into our discussion. So first, let's take a lay of the land and let's talk a little bit about what the new normal of collection litigation looks like right now. And Heath, we'll start with you.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for having me and Joe on the panel today. I think there's two ways to answer what the new normal of collections looks like. I think there's the short-term answer, and I think there's the long-term answer. I think in the short-term, you're gonna have a lot of variance. A lot of different states, a lot of different counties are gonna have different rules for closures and reopenings. Can you physically go into the court to stay remote, Zoom meetings, teleconference hearings? There's a lot of variance with client requirements. Are they going to let you sue? Are they going to let you serve, take judgment, take garnishments? And then there's a lot of different processes, a lot of different variances with, how a judgment is taken. And then, how long that whole process will take. So I think the new normal for the short term is it's going to depend and depend greatly, because I think even as states open up, you're going to see spikes in cases in different regions and they'll close back down. So I think for the remaining year of 2020, it's going to vary a lot across the board. And then I think in the long term, we're going to see a little bit of that variance continue out, but I think you're going to see some both good things and bad things come from that. I think you're going to see efficiencies over time. If courts begin to adopt like on a permanent solution, a teleconference model or a Zoom call court hearing, your collection attorneys are going to save a lot of time and travel. They're going to save a lot of time and efficiencies there. You're not going to need as much local appearance counsel. So there's ways that agencies and law firms will be more efficient in that. But at the same time, there's also going to be some negative long-term impact as far as just the scrutiny on collection litigation that we've seen during this COVID crisis play out. And we'll probably talk about that and really almost emerge this whole idea of optics being an important factor in collection litigation.
Let me give a little bit different perspective. I agree with everything that Heath has mentioned, but as a national process server, we maybe have a unique view of sort of the timing of what things have gone through and maybe where they're headed. So let me just take a little bit of a step back. So we started to see the slowdown in collection files in mid to late March. And really what was driving that is creditors and debt buyers one by one shutting down. Some of them for certain states, some of them flat out closing down the whole country, and some of them doing it in pieces. But ultimately, that hit bottom, and sort of hopefully the only bottom through this whole period, and that there isn't a second bottom. But the inflection point was about 30 days ago. And in our business, we had seen about half the business be put on hold, in effect, due to creditors and debt buyers. But, you know, what's important is half of the business wasn't and continued, and that was through most of the states. There were some states that were particularly hard hit, and also particular counties or cities that were particularly hard hit that completely shut down. But in general, most of the country, despite what you may be hearing, stayed operating in terms of courts taking files for not necessarily issuing them right away, but they were taking cases. They may not have been holding hearings, but in most places, service was allowed. Because legal requirements were allowed and sort of taken out of the stay-at-home orders in most places. What we started to see about 30 days ago is debt buyers started to release their holds. And pretty much all of them have done that with very few exceptions over the last few weeks. What we had not seen until just literally the last few days was any of the national banks releasing. And we have direct relations with a few of them, in addition to talking to a lot of them. But two of the ones that we have direct relations with have told us that July 1st, one of them is going to be turning back on. And the other one told us as early as possibly late this week. So we're starting to see some things with that. And then what we're also hearing is that, so we've gone through the decline, we hit the inflection point, we're starting for the last 30 days to see volumes starting to go up. And what we're hearing from everybody, which I think is very important for today's discussion, is we're hearing there's going to be a deluge of new business and new accounts that have been sort of held back during this whole period, and that's going to be coming starting in the fourth quarter. And then there's anticipation because of the softness of the economy that may be at unprecedented levels. So we could see a situation of where things flip, you know, where we're upside down from where we are right now.
Sorry, I'm just taking notes. That's an excellent start. Thank you both for that perspective. A reminder to everybody who's listening, if you have a question, for one or both of our panelists, send it in through the chat module or type it into the Q&A box, and we'll be sure to get it asked during our conversation today. So clearly business, courts are open and available to take a lawsuit if a collection agency or a debt buyer wants or a creditor wants to file one. I'll ask both of you, would you advise agencies and law firms to file lawsuits right now? And we're looking at it, Heath, to your comments before, mostly from a PR or an optics perspective. And if not, if you wouldn't advise them to file right now, at what point do you think it becomes okay to do so?
I can start again here. And I'll give my lawyer answer of it depends. Collection litigation has never been a one-size-fits-all process. There's so many different variables, different state laws, different county laws. It's just its own. Every industry, every client has their own different rules and requirements. So there is no one-size-fits-all approach. And with that, it does depend. I think the first thing you want to do is have what I call a crucial conversation with your client, and make sure that they're ready for it. If they've given you the go, make sure they understand, what that entails moving forward. And I think, I like to call, there's three different filters you want to filter your collection litigation through. There's the ROI filter, are we profitable? Does this make sense to file this lawsuit? The efficiency filter, is this the most efficient way to engage with the consumer? And then, what I call, and basically we've added to collection litigation is the optics filter. And we've had the optics filter for a lot of collection agency processes over the years. Collection agencies have been, it's the whole, case law says 180 calls in 6 months is okay, but does this look good if we do it, right? Is it efficient and it doesn't optically look good? And I think that's gonna be the component now that we're seeing of collection litigation. We've seen the spike in news stories over the garnishment of stimulus checks. I still haven't heard of an actual instance where that actually happened, although there's probably 25, 30 different articles about that. And you've seen a lot of state legislatures try to push restrictions on garnishments moving forward. So I think, obviously, and there's also, industries like student loans, housing, landlord, tenant, that have been shut down completely in this era. If you're in an industry where you can do it and you've checked off those filters, I think you can, and agencies are moving forward and law firms are moving forward with litigation.
I would add another sort of factor to that whole thing, and maybe I think of things a little bit, I'm not an attorney, so I may be looking at this more from a realpolitik point of view, but the reality is it's dependent on your client. So if your client is telling you that they're ready to go and you don't want to be ready to go without a reason that precludes anybody from being able to go forward, if there's a government restriction, a court restriction, whatever, that's one thing. But if you are able to proceed and a client wants you to proceed because they've judged the optics to be acceptable, you're potentially putting yourself in a position where you're going to be replaced by somebody who does want to go forward. With all good intentions, the optics has never been great in this industry. And one has to be compliant and do things professionally. And you can put, hardship and COVID policies in place that I think would be a good idea in this period. But to tell your client no when you could go forward is a bit of a minefield, put it that way.
So what you're saying, Joel, is it's really sort of out of the agency's hands and more so what the creditor's risk appetite is at this point in time.
I think, ultimately they can, if they want you to move forward and you don't want to, they can move forward with somebody else. So now, of course, you can give advice and counsel if you have concerns, but I think you have to be your eyes wide open so you have a risk of being replaced.
Okay, excellent. We've got our first question that's come in, so I'll take a pause on my questions and ask that. Use it as another reminder to ask everybody, if you have a question, type it in and we'll get it answered. Our first question is, do you see more service on the Secretary of State's offices nationwide as businesses could be closed due to COVID?
No, we're not seeing that. There are some interesting impacts of things, but we were really not able to serve much business for a while when there was the complete shutdowns, but those, you know, there's not too many places that still have the shutdown. So it was more a period of time that one couldn't do that. And I don't think anybody may have figured out the idea of let's go running to the Secretary of State. So we really didn't see that because it's pretty much the shutdowns have not been as big a factor as they were a month ago. But that's a good idea. I will take that back and mention that to a few clients because I hadn't thought of that myself.
Well, and I'll add too that I think moving forward, if we do see a phase two or a spike in cases in certain areas, I think governments will be, and governors and state, you know, and mayors will be very reluctant to close down businesses completely after the kind of the feedback and flack they've gotten for doing so for so long this first wave. So I think even if you do that, you know, even if we do see spike in ways, you know, the new normal, there will be some sort of presence open for businesses, even if there is a shut in order place or, you know, stay at home order.
Good to know, good to keep in mind. Let me ask, Joel, we'll let you go first this time. What are three things that agencies, and it doesn't have to be three, but up to maybe three things that agencies and collection law firms should be doing now as they sort of get ready for, you know, this deluge or this, you know, this point in time where everything is sort of back and fully reopened?
I had two items. And first is just sort of the, you know, maybe it goes back to the new reality, is I think it's really important for you to let your clients be aware that it's not normal. There's going to be courts that are slow. There's in terms of issuing files as well as hearings. Things are not, and they're not static for any particular place either, because it's like all over the map. This month may be this, and 3 weeks later may be that in the exact same court. And not necessarily always getting better. It sometimes gets reversed. So I think you have to alert your clients to that new reality so that their expectations, some of these, sometimes, you know, once clients give it to you, it's like this big black hole and they don't really understand what happens. And they may think that, oh, well, everything's back to normal because everything's reopened, and that's not necessarily the case, although in some places it is. So I think we have to lower the expectations a little bit. The other thing is, getting back to the deluge, is I think, you know, to be very frank about it, is my company also is very strong on the foreclosure side, and so we have some experience of what happened in the Great Recession. Although this one might be a greater recession. And in that, where there was the housing crisis, foreclosures went like to levels that were beyond anybody could have even reasonably thought on any projection. We're being told by banks that that could happen with their auto loans, their credit card loans, their unsecured business in particular. Is going to, they think, potentially go through the roof starting in the fourth quarter. And that's why I use the word deluge. So in that frame of mind, I think it's very important to think, and it may be counterintuitive right now because we're still going through a slow period, but one has to prepare for potentially adding staff like you've never done before. Back then, my company literally set up a separate office just to interview people and had three people just interviewing people full time all day long, 5 days a week. We you may consider adding capacity. So thinking about, okay, what are my, where can I do things like, for example, profit serving vendors? Maybe you don't know what the capacity limit of your vendor is. Maybe you should be looking now for adding capacity and things like that for litigation. Or, you know, if you do the contact side, there's, you know, all kinds of things that you need to do with capacity issues there as well. But I think that's something that's counterintuitive, and frankly, the way we're looking at the business right now is we're saying, okay, we always want to beat our competition. So we wanted to beat our competition in the slowdown period. We want to beat our competition as the business normalizes, and we want to beat our competition in the deluge. And I think that's a good way of thinking maybe for everybody's business, because if that happens, you have an opportunity to gain market share if you handle each of those steps and processes right, or you can lose market share. And it's these times where earthquake adjustments in market share happen, and they're not that common in business. So we could go another 10, 20 years before there will be major shifts in market share due to events beyond anybody's control. So this is a tremendous business opportunity for people who want to grow their market share, in my opinion.
Is that how you would look at it, Heath, as a great opportunity for companies to grow market share? Or, you know, do you have any other concerns or things that agencies should be concerned with as they look to sort of restart collection litigation?
Yeah, I certainly think, yeah, I mean, obviously, any opportunity is going to get, you know, any situation like this is going to give a lot of opportunity out there. And I think especially for the agencies, the collection law firms who adopt to the changing and to the new normal, I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. And I agree with Joel's point that, you know, first and foremost, I would, you know, if there is three things that agencies and law firms should be doing before the courts fully open, absolutely number one is reduce your expectations and forecasts. For collection litigation, I would reduce your expectations for suits filed, the time it takes to get suits filed, the service of process, default judgments and garnishments. All of those KPIs for litigation are going to be delayed from anywhere from 30 to 60 days, depending on the locality, the state, the county. Because even if courts are open, it doesn't mean that all the clerks are there working at the same time. They might be open to reduced capacity. They might be open at 25% capacity. So, and then you also have, you know, as Joel mentioned, you know, you've got people that have been filing lawsuits since March. You have a backlog of lawsuits. It's just going to take the courts longer to process that, to work through the process. So it's going to take longer to get all default judgments, to get garnishments, all of that process. So, number one thing is you want to reduce your expectations. And with that, you know, I like to call it the second thing is, you know, make sure you have all your ducks in a row. So, you know, those three filters I talked about, the ROI filter, make sure you know if your legal process is profitable and at what day. Is it day 30, day 60, is it day 90? Because you're going to have to extend that out, as these delays move forward, as we're forecasting for the rest of the year. Your efficiency and consumer engagement, you want to make sure you have that where you're tracking which payment point your consumers are paying off of, because it's going to vary by client, state by state, industry by industry. And then, you know, we've talked about it, you know, a little bit, and the title of the presentation is the optics of litigation. You know, I would have an internal team that talks about the optics of each legal process you're doing, and make sure, you know, the best way to describe an optics filter is, you know, is this something that we're okay with being on the front page of the newspaper? And that may adjust things that you're gonna do moving forward. So things that you did do previously, you wouldn't do now. Like, for example, suing on first responders. That's a common thing I've seen clients request and agencies hold back on. They don't want the optics of what it looks like to sue a healthcare worker during this time. So you wanna have a team that talks about what are the practices we're doing? Are we okay with that moving forward? And then the last thing I would say, you know, that kind of piggybacks on this, or the third thing is, you know, I would focus on your highest propensity to pay. If you have your data of your consumers, you have the database, you know that if you're filing 100 lawsuits, not all 100 of those consumers are going to pay. Focus on the ones that are going to pay. Focus on the ones that are going to pay when they're served. If you know 25% of your consumers of a portfolio are going to pay for when they're served, you want to measure that and focus on those first, because you're going to have these delays. It's going to take a longer time to get judgment, to get garnishment. So to get that quick return of investment, I certainly would focus and maybe whittle down the consumers you're going to sue first and prioritize that now more than ever.
And the way they should prioritize that, or the way you would recommend they prioritize that, is by just sort of going through those three filters, or is there another way they should be, sort of developing that list of how they're going to or who they're going to proceed against first?
Sure. I mean, each agency is different. Each law firm is different. You have data inside your system that tells you, for this client, for this portfolio, X amount of consumers pay when they're served. You can pull that out from your collection software. The same thing with, or inbound calls. And I would measure inbound calls. I would measure right party contacts. You're going to want to measure all of that because you're going to want to know if you're suing on a particular consumer or a particular portfolio, and you're getting a lot of inbound calls, but they're all saying, I can't pay. It's a whole group of restaurant workers. So you're going to want to filter that out and know that. But it's in each agency's and each law firm's data that you can extract out there with some data analytics.
Okay, thank you. Another question that has come in, do you think the courts themselves will push back on volume, given a recent study that came out from Pew Charitable Trust that said the majority of hearings and lawsuits being filed now at the state court level are debt collection cases? Is that something you expect pushback from the courts themselves?
I haven't seen that, and I'm not sure if I see that. I'm based in Colorado, and they tried to pass, and they did pass, some restrictions on garnishment moving forward. And what came out of it after the fact was that when they took that bill to the courthouses absolutely said no. They realized they're going to lose a lot of money. Now, Colorado has Tabor. You can't raise taxes. So a lot of courthouses have increased court fees for that. But a lot of courts understand that a lot of their fees come from their volume filers, and that's the collection industry. So I don't know if I would see courthouses playing into it. I could see legislatures and governors trying to play into it moving forward. But I'm not sure if I see it in the courthouse spectrum of things. But Joel may have something else to add on that.
I would agree with everything that Heath just said. I think that, I have read the Pew research, so I know about that. Anybody who's in the court or anybody who's in our industry, there was nothing in the Pew research that I think was that surprising, frankly. I think we all know that volumes have increased. We know all that. There is people who have the political position that litigation should be restricted, and they certainly could take this point in time to push that agenda. I frankly don't think it will work. I mean, the only test of that we have was in Massachusetts, where the attorney general put, and this was at the height of the situation in Massachusetts, put a ban on all collection litigation and other collection activities. And he was sued by a number of groups, including the ACA International. And the court ruled that it was illegal for the attorney general to do that. I can't speak for contact collection, but in the litigation side, consumers do have due process. And it's not a situation where they don't have due process. So nobody has to pay 1 cent to any collection lawsuit without taking advantage of due process. And as lots of protections of that. So I think that, you know, most lawmakers are attorneys, and I think most of them understand that. But once again, you know, political forces in this country, and given certain, if certain situations happen, yeah, that could there could be restrictions, whether they be at the state level or federal. But I don't think we can, I mean, if we count that into our business model right now, we should all shut down and go home. And I don't think we can do that.
Well, nobody's logging off the webinar, so I guess nobody's taking your advice and shutting down right away. So that's a good sign, I think. Joel, let's talk about serving the serving process right now. And let me ask you, should that be any different in today's environment? You know, for example, you know, sort of an extreme example, I wrote about a lawsuit that was filed last week by an individual who believed he was harassed and his family was harassed and sort of subjected to, I guess, COVID, in, for lack of a better word, because a process server showed up at his house, wasn't wearing a mask, was trying to hand documents over, wasn't social distancing. So I'm just wondering, you know, if you can shed any light on how process serving should be any different in today's environment.
Yeah, there's a new normal. And first of all, that was not my company that was against.
Sorry, I should have said but yes.
There's a new normal, I think. And we've been doing this for several months now, but it's masks, gloves, and or sanitizing your hands, serving at a distance, making sure that the server understands that they should not be going out if they have a temperature or any symptoms. And in general, a policy that respects the health of the consumer and the server. That's the new normal. I think that's necessary and relevant.
What about, sorry, let me jump in first, Heath, one second. What about reasonable expectations for process serve rates, and whether or not you see that changing either now or, you know, sort of in the future?
You know, that's a fascinating question to me. It may not be to anybody else, but what's fascinating about it is when this first started happening and there were all the shutdowns, we saw service rates that we'd never seen before because everybody was home. And so we were actually seeing substantially higher service rates that fairly quickly, within a few weeks, went back to more normal levels. And I think it was offset by the education of people being afraid. There were X percent of people were afraid to the situation. So sort of they were there, but they wouldn't maybe open the door. So we went to normal rates at that time. And what's the unclear factor right now is now that people are starting to venture out either to the workplace or going outside their homes a little bit more, what's going to be the outcome of that? So I think it's a little too early to shake out. But as of right now, we're not seeing rates that are any different really than before.
Okay, thanks. Heath, did I jump in and interrupt you before?
No, I just was going to kind of add to that and talk about it from an agency or a law firm here who's using a process server. And I'm sure Joel's seen this, but you're going to want to have a little bit of increased oversight of those processes. You might have clients asking you what your process servers are doing. I'm sure Joel's gotten requests for how we're keeping consumers safe, because it's the safety of the consumer, it's the safety of the process server, and then also tracking complaints. I've seen an increase of law firms and agencies wanting to track complaints and get reporting back from the process server if they're seeing consumers who are complaining about, you know, you're too close to me because of this pandemic.
So are you saying that you're seeing more complaints, or you're seeing more companies wanting to track the complaints?
More companies being interested in tracking that. either from client requirements or just from their own internal their own internal optics, you know, team.
Is there any data on that yet that you've seen?
I haven't seen any data, but I'll defer to Joel on that.
Yeah, let me comment on that, and you know, also to what Keith was mentioning. We do have a policy, and yes, we're being asked by quite a few people for that, and some of our clients have more the creditors or debt buyers have put through policies specific to it, which in all cases that we saw was not as broad as what we put in ourselves, so we were always meeting it so far. But yeah, we're seeing that in terms of the, and also, you know, do you have complaint logs and all that? But that's not a new thing. I mean, we always get asked that in our regular audits. But what we have seen is frankly very few complaints from consumers that we hear about them. They usually don't make them directly to us. They make it to our clients and then we hear about it. But, you know, to be very frank about it, there's the majority of the complaints that we get when we check into them, not on this, but in, you know, over the years, are a high percentage of diversionary excuses, no different than, you know, than anything else in the collection industry when there's complaints. I mean, you know, some are valid and a lot of them are not. So we've not seen very many of these at this point in time, and it's probably because we did have a policy and we've been trying to follow it as best as possible. But you're going to see, you know, it's human nature. There's going to be a new excuse now for people who want to give excuses. So it could be a diversion as well. But we're not, frankly, seeing a whole hell of a lot of complaints up to now.
The dog ate my summons.
Oh, they're better ones than that.
Sorry, I've never been, you know, never been accused of being very creative when it comes to that. So.
We can do a session one time on, you can get a panel of process servers and it'll be your Friday night drinking session. We'll tell our stories.
That would be, I'm sure that would be very entertaining. Keith, you talked a little bit about sort of adjusting forecasts and adjusting expectations. Can you talk a little bit about what, you know, what an agency can reasonably forecast with respect to their litigation department or their litigation operation?
Yeah, and it's, again, I'm going to give you the answer. It depends, because every agency, every law firm has a different process, you know, depending on outbound calls, letters sent before they sue. I think what I can say is what I've said before, in that I would, at a minimum, if you're measuring your KPI rates by, you know, inbound calls or by, you know, payment plans off of process serving, payment plans after court appearances, payment plans after judgment and after garnishment, all of those KPIs are going to be delayed from anywhere from 30 to 60 days, depending on the states they're in, the counties they're in, and any kind of spike they're going to see, you know, moving forward into Q3, Q4 this year. It's really hard to say. I mean, you can do a deeper dive and look at the numbers and make a better projection, but across the board, I think the broadest answer you can give is expect delays between 30 and 60 days.
I think that seems to be, if I remember correctly in reading transcripts from some of the earnings calls from some of the larger collection companies and debt buyers that are publicly traded, I think that's what they were saying when they were discussing their first quarter earnings. You know, sort of late April, early May, was that it's not like it's not going to happen. It's just going to happen later. So
yeah,
I think that tracks.
Yeah. And you're going to, you know, as Joel's mentioned, you know, we're going to see this backlog unleashed, if you will, or, you know, entered into the court system. You're going to have higher employment. So you're going to see a decrease in that. But if you are focusing on, you know, those higher propensity to payers first, you should see less drop off than just filing lawsuits across the board.
How do you recommend? Go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, let me just add, because I unfortunately had to do a forecast last week, and it was like I was saying, like, okay, there's a bit of darts in the wind here, because there's a lot of factors when you're looking, you know, I had to forecast, I was asked to forecast 2021 even. So, I mean, you've got, will the virus rebound, whether it's nationally or other places? When will the banks restart and how heavily they're going to restart? How big this deluge will be? There's the backlog part of that, and then there's the placements that would be due to the economic downturn, which we haven't really seen at all at this point yet, in terms of hitting the collection industry. And then there's another X factor is the courts and government and all of that. So, you know, it's a very difficult thing to forecast. I did my best. I had it where it ramped up to normal levels in litigation by mid fourth quarter, and then showed significant increased growth from that period on through 2021. But, you know, once again, that's a crystal ball that I may not be able to predict very well.
We'll hold you to it, Joel.
Absolutely. I'm writing the number down. I'm going to find a sports book
that I can bet on. The owners of my company are probably going to hold me to it, but thank you for the sympathy.
I'm trying to find a sports book where I can make a bet on it. with so much uncertainty, but with there sort of being a certainty that when things do sort of open up, there's going to be more. What advice would you give to a collection operation or how to manage that going forward? Like, you know, how do you manage your staffing levels? How do you manage, you know, how you're going to manage all of these cases, and how do you sort of account for that? Like, do you just sort of wait for it to happen before you put a plan into place, or is it something you can start sort of preparing for now? How do you kind of help, you know, can we help sort of people think through that process and start to build a plan or put a plan into place? Does that make sense? In my head, it did.
Yeah, that makes sense, Mike. And I think, you know, to the extent that, you know, you're on this call, you know, you've survived phase one, you know, you're still here, you're still in business. I think there's a lot of lessons that you can learn about that. There's a lot of verticals in our industry, student loans, landlord tenant, obviously those are the two hardest hit. So I think your plan is going to be different than, you know, than a credit card, you know, if you primarily focus on credit cards or telecom, right? Even telecom, you know, every industry has been affected differently. So it's going to depend on the industries that you service. I think that, you know, if you're in like a landlord tenant specialization or a student loan specialization, you're already looking for, I mean, I would be focused on the fact that, you know, student loans haven't come back on yet. Landlord tenants is going to come back on, but if we have a phase two, I would be prepared to be the first one to be shut off all over again. Forbearance and injunction on evictions and collection notices. So you can take lessons from this first thing and how things were treated. And, you know, one thing that I think we haven't really talked about too much is the healthcare industry. And they're treated completely different because, you know, hospital litigation practices have been a target for media articles over the last essentially 2 years. And as they reopen, if you're an agency focused in healthcare, you're absolutely going to want to have those conversations with your healthcare providers about what their tolerance level is moving forward, looking at what reduction in, you know, accounts they're going to see from bed volume for the last 3 months. How do we want to treat these consumers moving forward? And, you know, because I just saw actually on your website, Mike, about the article about the class action filed by the plaintiffs against collection practices this past week. And so we're seeing that tick back up, that scrutiny on healthcare collections. So, you know, you're going to want to prepare for that for, you know, phase two, looking on how you survived and how you manage phase one.
That's the the University of Kentucky you were talking, right? The lawsuit Kentucky where people are suing because the University of Kentucky is a state healthcare organization, and they're using the State Department of Revenue to collect on unpaid debts, and that's the only healthcare organization in the state that's allowed to do so. So some people are saying that that's not very fair. We've talked a fair bit about the optics. You walked through, Heath, you walked through some steps about sort of the perception team and, you know, what happens if you end up on the first front page of the paper and how to, you know, maybe sort of try and mitigate that. If somebody starts to see that might be happening, where they're maybe going to end up on the front page, or, you know, there's concern that they're going to end up on the front page, do you have any other ideas or any other things that you've seen an agency can do to try and prevent that from happening?
You know, I don't know that there's anything we can prevent it from doing it. Look at the example, again, going back to garnishing stimulus checks. I haven't heard of one agency that actually did that, and there is 25 articles about it. So I know the media are looking for those kind of stories. And I think it's more about preparing you and your client's appetite for that if that comes up. I think that one thing that I've seen agencies do that I like a lot is when they're, you know, in this post-COVID new normal, they're tracking, you know, they're obviously tracking consumers who are affected by COVID and can't take or laid off and don't want any phone calls. They're also tracking consumers who have been affected by it but still want to engage and still want to pay, because there are still, you know, that part of the story doesn't get told. There's a lot of consumers that still want to pay, and collections were up across the board for April and held pretty steady for May. But then I also like the agencies that are tracking positive feedback and tracking the consumers who are saying, thank you so much for helping me during this time. And I liked it when states were looking at, you know, at closing down certain areas and clients are looking at making that decision. But I also like it because, you know, if a client comes to you and says, hey, we got these bad optics are looking at coming out, you know, we want to stop this collection process. Well, you have a whole phone bank of positive calls that you can send to your client. Now, you can apply this factor with the media too. Now, I'm not saying you want to release those phone calls to the media, but if a media comes knocking your door and wants to give you bad press for your collection practices, you know, there's ways to extract the positive feedback from those consumers for having those interactions. So I think you can do a little bit of that, but you also understand, as Joel said, the nature of the business we're in, we're always going to see, negative feedback. It's just more of, it's been said here on a couple of webinars over the last 3 to 6 months by people smarter than me that this is a real opportunity, and Roger Wise is one of them, that this is a real opportunity for our industry to change the image and perception of that. And one way we do that is by monitoring that consumer engagement. And we're doing that with our collection processes. But a lot of times agencies can have kind of a wall between their collection practices and their collection litigation practices. And I think you want to bring that consumer feedback, that consumer process into your collection litigation process and track positive feedback there too. And I think you're going to go a long way in helping your case.
I agree with all of that. I would add a few things that may be more specific to the litigation side of things is I think it's really important to get across to any media situations in particular that the reality is that collection litigation is the most highly regulated thing in the collection industry. And those of you who are not in litigation may disagree with me, but I strongly feel that attorneys and litigation are much more regulated than anything else in the collection industry and have been for years. Whether it's bar associations, court rulings, court history, laws, whatever it is, and that there's a built-in due process for every single person. There, that a reality. And I think we may take that for granted. And I think the reason this country has all that is for these exact kind of situations. People have individual hardships, or areas may have hardships, and that's why there is due process. So a judge can review whether a person has a legitimate situation that their hardship is valid and needs to have an outcome that's adjusted for that. And I think the industry, we're so much on the defensive all the time, which is understandable, that I think it's important to point that out. And then I would say it's good if an organization extends their hardship policies, which they probably already had, but wrap that around the cloak of COVID so that there is a broader newness to it that takes that into account. I've seen on a tremendous amount of companies and firms' websites where they have a COVID posting on their homepage, and you click on that and it tells you, you know, in light of COVID, here's the new reality. That's really smart to do. And then, you know, within my particular space, I think it's important to use a process server that has a COVID policy, that's doing things that are, you know, trying to be a good citizen in this situation. And I think that's the best thing you can do is just keep your nose clean, try to do what's right and what's fair, and to make no secret of it.
If you do get called, or if you do sort of find, you know, the some publicity, would you advise commenting, you know, participating, or would you advise not commenting or not participating?
I'll let Heath handle that. He's much more experienced with that kind of a situation than I do. Thankfully, I've not had that situation, so I'll let Heath take that one.
Yeah, I mean, generally, it's hard to get your story out there. Even if you get quoted and speak with the media, they likely will just use part of that. The best approach, you know, is to issue a statement versus answering questions. Mark Neeb caught some flack, president of ACA. He was quoted or misquoted in an article a couple months ago. You know, you could ask ACA to comment on your behalf if you feel more comfortable that way. But I think generally, you know, media inquiries aren't going to go well for you. And, you know, the one thing that I would say is that, especially in the healthcare area, we've seen the scrutiny focused on hospitals. I guess the media feels like if they shame a collection agency or collection law firm, it's not going to do any good. They've taken their article attention a step higher to shaming the creditors. So you certainly want to talk with your hospitals and make sure they're comfortable with every practice that you do, and make sure that they're comfortable with it being on the front page of that newspaper.
Another question that's come in here, it says, judges in Florida have no legal authority to delay any aspect of the process because of hardship. Is that the same elsewhere? Does that, either of you know?
I can't speak to that.
I can't speak to that on a formal basis. I know that, you know, in my time as a collection attorney, certainly judges encourage resolution, encourage delay on an informal basis, on a case-by-case basis. I don't know across the board about that, but, you know, I think, you know, most recently, you know, the closest comparison I would say to that was New Mexico last week or so, when the Supreme Court came out with their rules prohibiting garnishment. But that's coming from the Supreme Court's office versus a case by case versus a county court or state court judge.
Okay. There's sort of two aspects to collection litigation. There's obtaining the judgment and then pursuing the judgment. We've talked a lot about, you know, sort of the first part of it in obtaining the judgment or sort of, you know, filing a lawsuit to collect on an unpaid debt. Would you advise pursuing a judgment at this point, or is that a different is that a different thing we have to cover in a different webinar?
I mean, you know, not give you a too complicated answer. I think by general rule, default judgments are okay. I don't think there hasn't been much scrutiny about that. In theory, their due process rights that Joel mentions, you know, they've had the time to answer. They haven't responded. You know, I haven't seen any kind of uptick in scrutiny on taking default judgments. So I think you're generally fine in that area at the risk of not giving my lawyer answer if it depends to this question. So maybe I'll just say that anyway. It also depends, Mike.
Let me comment as to what people are doing. I can't speak to what's best or what's the right thing. But we're seeing, in general, some creditors and debt buyers are not putting any restrictions on their garnishment activity. Others are restricting just bank garns, because their view, having spoken to some of them, is that if somebody is still working, then a wage garnishment is going to be able to be in place. If they no longer are in a job, then there's no wage garnishment to be gotten. Whereas a bank garn is looked at a little more aggressively as to, you don't know if they're working, you don't know. So there have been, I think, more restrictions on bank garnishment in this period of time than on wage. But there's an equal number of creditors and debt buyers are not putting any restrictions on that kind of activity.
Good to know. Well, we've just about run out of time, so I'll wrap up today's event by, first of all, thanking Joel, thanking Heath. Really appreciate you taking the time, sharing your insight, sharing your perspective. Really appreciate it. This is a difficult topic, and you both handled it very well, so thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for having us. We appreciate it. And if you guys have any further questions, feel free to drop them in the chat box or reach out to me. I'm happy to help you guys.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, one more time, Heath, Joel, thank you. To everybody who watched today, everybody who listened, participated, thank you. I appreciate your continued support. Stay tuned. We've got more webinars coming up the rest of this week and off through next week. Stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Thanks, guys. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.